Welcome to the fifth episode of Lola Lykke's Female Changemaker series. My name is Laura and I'm the co-founder of Lola Lykke, the Finnish wellness brand for moms. Our Female Changemaker series is dedicated to individuals whose professional and personal passions have driven them to do something extraordinary, bringing sustainable positive change to women's well-being. During this series, we chat to amazing women's health experts, professionals and parents who have gone out of their way to accelerate change and to create positive impact around them. I am joined by our very own content creator, Maana.
Hello again.
And today we are joined by Anne Bacon, a neonatal nurse, among many other things. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Maana.
So excited to have you here.
Your life story is really amazing. We spoke a little about it when we were planning the podcast. Can we start with that, how your journey has brought you here with us today?
Yeah, sure. I am a nurse and I went into nursing a bit later in my life. I was 28 when I graduated from nursing school. So I started off with communications and then started taking my prerequisites for nursing. So when I graduated from nursing school, I was enrolled in a partnership with a program with medical student and a nurse, and I started out in psychiatric nursing to do that. But I was interested in pediatric nursing at that time. Yeah. So I learned about a facility in New York that was a residence foster home for children with HIV. So I reached out to them and I actually switched my direction in nursing. I went from psychiatric nursing to go work in the pediatric HIV world. Yeah.
Wow.
So I worked there for 5 years, and it was a very interesting time of working in pediatric HIV. And then I had my first child, and we relocated to California. And when we relocated to California, the options were less than they are in New York City. Mm-hmm. It was a little more of a smaller town. And so my options were to really work in the hospital, which I really never expected to do. So I worked in maternal, went to the hospital to find a pediatric job. And the only opening was in neonatal intensive care unit. So I applied and worked there for nearly 17 years. So wow. I stayed there. In that time, I worked in the neonatal intensive care unit. And then I also floated into postpartum care. So I would take care of moms and babies immediately after having having a baby. And there was a time when I just felt like that was a better fit for me. So I worked there full time for about 8 years.
Yeah.
And I had another child while we were living in California, and we raised our children there. And right about the time when my son was about 16, we started thinking about living overseas, and we applied and began working in Qingdao, China. So I worked as a school nurse there, and I did that for 2 years. And then since then, we relocated back to California because of a change in our jobs, and then we just recently came back, and my husband accepted an administrative position in the School of International School of Helsinki. So I'm working there as a part-time school nurse, and at the same time going to school and getting my master's in public health, like Maana, at the same school, and doing that while I'm working here in Helsinki.
Yeah, I was so amazed by your story and that sort of path from pediatric nursing to postpartum care. I mean, can we go back to maybe discuss a little bit more about caring for children with HIV? What was that like? And was the stigma the same as around adults?
It was a very interesting time to be working in HIV care. This was in the late 90s when protease inhibitors, which is the drug that's become so commonly used in HIV now, were just coming onto the market. So, but it really was at this turning point. So while adults had this access to these protease inhibitors, children didn't. So when I worked there, children were just starting to get these medications, but they were all on clinical trials. So it was prolonging the lives of these children because these medications were available, but it was just the beginning. So while I was working there, because it was a foster care residence, these were children who no longer lived with their parents, or they had less frequent contact with their parents, or their parents were unable to care for them for a number of reasons. But so these children lived in this group home and received all sorts of care. So the stigma at that time it had really changed because the awareness of people had become, I think there was a growing understanding of HIV at that time. And also certain things happened even in the media. For instance, I just saw something where Princess Diana came to the hospital that was associated with the facility where I worked. And she hugged a child with HIV. It was quite a moment.
Yeah, that was the same hospital.
It was affiliated with our facility. Okay, yes. But that was that change where, I mean, you can imagine now it just seems incomprehensible that you wouldn't feel comfortable hugging a child with HIV. But at there was a lot of media attention and a lot of more understanding. So the facility where I worked had quite good donation and quite a good endowment, so they had a lot of resources for these children. Mm-hmm. However, they were still ill, and they still had a lot of medical issues, complicated issues. So they received, there were doctors on site, there were psychiatrists, there were occupational physical therapists, they received all sorts of resources. But while I was there, there still were children who were quite ill and children who died.
Yeah, I mean, I can't picture anything more heartbreaking than that, to be honest. I mean, how do you cope with something like that as a person? How do you, what does it feel like when you go home after a day's work?
Yeah, I think at the time, it's heartbreaking to see children suffer in that way.
Yeah.
It felt hopeful because you could see this progress, but the day-to-day, of course, it was... Mm. It was very heartbreaking, and it could take, some days were harder than others. And then, however, you're working with children, and ill children can still be just as lively as a healthy child. Mm. So you have this like wonderful energy from these kids who are so cute and so, you know, such a pleasure really to take care of.
Yeah. I mean, really, your journey then took you to the neonatal intensive care unit, another fairly hectic environment, I would imagine.
Yes, it's known to be. It's unexpected. They call it the ER of the maternal child area, although there's a pediatric aspect to it. But neonatal is very care. It's very unexpected. You never know what's walking through the door. And so you have to be prepared for unexpected things. But in the facility where I worked, you do have these long-term stays. So some babies would stay up to several months with us. So we really get to know the families and you really get to know the babies on top of this, these immediate, you know, emergencies that take place.
Yeah. And then, as I understand, your work took you to a hospice at some stage as well.
Yes. So after working in the maternal child area, then when we had this change of plans, so we were expected to go to Moscow, but there were some diplomatic issues between the U.S. and Russia. So our job that was planned after we left China was supposed to be going to Moscow. It fell through 3 weeks before we were supposed to leave. So unexpectedly, we were back home in California. And when I went to explore options of working at that time, because as a nurse, you don't just enter in the hospital and you get a day shift and it's just you get the job back that you had. You have to kind of earn your position. So you usually pay your dues and you work nights, which I did for many years. Mm. And then you build up to be able to have that job. So options were somewhat limited. And I had always been interested in being a hospice nurse. I wanted to have that experience, having been the nurse in the births, and I always had a curiosity of what it was like to be a hospice nurse. So I did that for nearly a year, and it was probably one of the most interesting nursing experiences that I've ever had.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that? I'm so intrigued.
It was... You know, I think it came at a time of a life. I think we all come in, these opportunities show up at times in our lives when we should have them, right? Mm. And so I feel like at the position I am, the age I am in my life, I learned a lot. I had never cared for adults except for in nursing school. So there was a steep learning curve in order to care for these adults. But in hospice and then in the organization that I worked, you have people who have had a diagnosis that will be they have a lifespan of probably 6 months. So a diagnosis is terminal illness, usually probably within the 6 months. So you have people with chronic conditions where it's getting worse, or you have people who have acute conditions where their life is not going to last beyond 6 months. Working with majority of an elderly population with lots of different health issues, but it's not a hospital based situation. It's home based. So we would go into people's homes or people's care facilities, and care for them there. Letting them dictate. In hospice, it's really what your desires are. How do you want to have your death? And in my example, you took care of people at the moment of their death. Sometimes they would pass when you weren't there. And one of the programs that our hospice offers, and as many European countries do too, it's a program where it's called Aid in Dying in our situation. So it's that people who have a terminal illness and they want to choose the time of their death, the doctors will prescribe them the medications to take, and they will take that on their own. So I wasn't involved with that because I didn't have as much long-term experience. Yeah. It's quite an intense experience, as you can imagine. And in our facility, because it was a religiously affiliated organization, the nurses were not allowed to be present when the patients ingested that medication, but they we could be there to care for them after they took the medication. So, yeah, but in my situation, I wasn't participating in that, but I took care of patients in the days, the minutes, the moment of their death.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say that, I mean, as a generation, we're quite detached from life and death.
That's true.
Birth and death in many ways. I'm curious to know whether your personal view on life and death has been altered by your work experience at both ends of the spectrum.
Yes, it definitely has. I working in hospice taught me a lot about seeing people at the end of their life, what's important to them, but also what decisions you want to make in your life, of what's important to see that there's a finality to all of our lives, and to know that we only have a limited amount of time, and we really need to use that time with what feels right for us, and to build relationships, and you can see people at the end of their life who have relationships that, you know, they don't have that love and support, and how valuable that is for all of us. But definitely affected me in thinking of the path I want to take for the remainder of my life too. So yeah, it was very impactful, and I love hearing this. I loved hearing the stories of different patients and hearing what about their own life experiences. It taught me a lot.
Yeah, I can believe that. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's honestly one of the reasons why we wanted to invite you here, because you are a female change maker. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to come up with something incredible. You need to make an impact in someone's life. And I think we both agree, Laura, that and you really, really have made an impact on so many people's lives.
Thank you. Well, it's really a gift to be, and a pleasure to be a nurse. It's hard work, but having that intimacy that you have with people and seeing them at their absolute most vulnerable, open times, and caring for them it's the gift of being a nurse.
And you also are a mother.
Yep.
How did your professional career, do you feel like your professional career impacted your motherhood, your journey? You had already been a nurse for some time before you had your first child.
Yes, but not long. And I feel like I almost could have, I think I became a better nurse once I became a mother, because I understood everyone's experiences a little bit better. I definitely think back even when I was working in the with my pediatric patients, I just didn't have a full grasp of the understanding of what it's like to have a child, and then that sort of responsibilities. So absolutely, I think being a nurse impacted how I am as a mother, and being a mother definitely affected how I am as a nurse as well. When I worked in the hospital, I had a group of colleagues, you know, in maternal child, frequently a lot of the nurses are women. So I had a cohort of these women that I worked oftentimes, well, for many years we worked night shift together. Many of us, I would say almost 95% of us, were mothers as well. So I had taken care of mothers, taken care of their babies, and had this cohort of colleagues who were also mothers. You can't get more supportive than that. It changed me, and I feel like that was taught me so much about different. Everyone has a different approach, and not my the way I would choose to do something isn't the right way for someone else. And you realize that a lot in nursing too. You can assess what their needs are, and you may tell them what they should do, but they have their own history, they have their own needs, and you have to respect where that patient or that person is and understand that all of us are so unique, and just support them along, even though you may not understand. And in hospice, actually, sometimes some people would make decisions about their care that you would say, you wouldn't be able to really understand it. You know, you maybe wouldn't, just it was hard to get your head around. That was just respecting each individual person as they are, where they come from.
Because, if I may jump in there, I mean, it kind of brings to mind maternal care in that kind of way as well, that the fact that you can make decisions and vouch for yourself, even if it's not the right choice, or even if it's not a choice that most of moms or nurses would make, the fact that you've got that freedom at that point in time in your life to make that decision is really important. Mm-hmm. I think it's, even if you're in hospice, it is part of regaining or kind of holding on to that control of your own life.
And your dignity, and to allow each individual to maintain their autonomy and their dignity to some regret, at some aspect. And, you know, even as medical providers, you have an obligation to provide information, and then you just support that individual for where they are.
I love how you mentioned information. I think for us, information and education is absolutely one of the key things at the very core of what we do and what drives us, making sure that especially mums, because, well, we are a wellness brand for mums, but that mums can make that decision based on real information, evidence-based information, evidence-based practice, things that are clinically proven to work. It doesn't really matter what that decision is, that's up to them, but to have that information is really important. And going from that, how do you feel the maternal education is in California?
It's a bit different. Compared to, I don't really have a great understanding in Finland of what moms, what kind of prenatal care they're given and what kind of information is shared. It could always be better, no matter where we are. Right. It's just, and I think you're right. I could see that in the hospital when I would have working with a mom and the baby, and there's so much going on. There's breastfeeding, and there's so many changes, and there's the physical pain that they may be dealing with. There's so many things. But if you can provide them with education or just information that they can empower them and help them understand where they are, it would alleviate so much anxiety and build trust. You know, it's so important to have that trust with someone who's caring for you. And you're right. I mean, having evidence-based information that's factual, and then from there they can make a decision. And it's the most important thing we can give to our patients.
Yeah, it really is.
And would postpartum care in the US, from your experience, be quite mother-centric, or would it be more focused on the baby?
It's definitely changing. And I think when I started working in the hospital in 2001, so it's been a while, and I definitely saw a change and a shift in the way things were done. I think even when we started, the babies would stay in the nursery, you know, for the night. And sometimes I think they give a little respite and that's still done. But, you know, where dads were thought to just, I think at the very beginning, dads weren't staying the night or weren't being present for, I think they were present for the deliveries, but not present for the whole postpartum experience. And now they've newly designed hospitals are accommodating partners. So in the new facility where I worked, and it was around 2008 when it was built, there was definitely a separate bed for a pullout bed for the partner to be there. The care is growing. I think it's evolving and much more of a dyad between the mom and the baby than it is just baby focused. Sometimes in the neonatal intensive care unit, that can get a little blurred sometimes because the focus and the needs maybe might be a bit more. But when you're caring for even a NICU baby, the mom is often at the bedside and she needs care. She's recovering from birth, even if it might be a few months, but she's still going through the postpartum experience. And sometimes, that could be forgotten, but I think there's a level of awareness that's better now.
Yeah, yeah. But here, let's take a short break and we'll come back and discuss the role of fathers a little bit more.
Great.
So we're back. Yes, we've been discussing the role of fathers a little bit lately. I mean, it is our intention to bring fathers into the wellness and experience and the brand in general, because we view fathers as having a major role in women's wellness. And perhaps, like you kind of said previously, fathers have not been fully included in the process in the past. We are seeing developments now that are quite new, which are really, really welcome and positive. But it's relatively new. And so I wanted to discuss the role of fathers and what that means to you, and what it was like in California and what you have learned during your travels around the world.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think in newborn care and in I think fathers have been included, and of course, from my understanding, it appears that the way the structure is set up here with fathers getting paternity leave, and there's some family leave that's included here, and it's included in the U.S. too. But I don't want to say that the fathers aren't part of the process, because they absolutely are. I mean, so many women, to have a partnership, it's vital to have to do it together. You know, that's the necessary. I think it's a lot of pressure is still placed on the mother being the primary caregiver for things, where the father might be the support. And if it could be maybe a bit more balanced in that, where the responsibility sometimes wasn't placed so much on mothers. That's my own personal experience. Mm. I can see that from raising my children in California. I think sometimes mothers are sort of filling in the holes that might need to be filled, where father's expectation isn't sometimes for the same way. But the partnership between fathers, I think it's probably very good. And even when we lived in China, I have to say, you see people from all different cultures when you're living in a sort of an expat environment. And women still did the primary part of the child raising, and the fathers oftentimes were working, and that might have been just that unique situation. But even in China, I saw. I was pleasantly surprised to see how involved fathers were in their lives. It isn't the same as here. You know, it was a bit of a separation where they were more the breadwinners, and the mothers would stay home. But that was my experience.
Yeah, yeah. And how about your view on motherhood in general? I know we discussed this last time we spoke, and I'm just really curious to hear about your views on what motherhood means for a woman and how that changes your life.
Yeah. I think when you give birth in the hospital and you have this child, you probably don't, you can't fully grasp the changes that are coming your way. It changes you entirely. Forever, you put your needs second. Mm-hmm. And you always have it in the back of your mind of making a decision, you know. And I know fathers do exactly the same thing, but as a mother, it's to a different level, because you've given birth, you've fed them, you know, oftentimes with your own body. It's, you know, a different kind of intimacy. But motherhood is it's just has personally it's altered me in so many ways. I feel like until I had my first child, I was sort of it's like a prolonged adolescence, you know, where I sort of stayed sort of in my didn't fully become a woman, I think, until I gave birth. But that was my own personal experience, because it really taught me so much about empathy and compassion and you know, caring for babies in the hospitals with my colleagues. I think we all would agree, like, those babies we cared for were like, we treated them like our own children. Yeah. Mm. And so you have a better, you just have that sort of care and love for an understanding for a universal understanding of what for women all over the world who have children. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a really difficult transition to make. Most moms would probably agree with that.
Yeah, definitely. It's
like you said, it doesn't come overnight. And yes, when you have a baby for the first time, you cannot comprehend what's coming your way. Yeah. And it does take a moment for your mind to catch up.
That does.
And then to adjust again to the level of responsibility and the fact that you'll always be second. Yeah. But then to accept that as your new reality, in a way that you can still go after your dreams and live as an adult woman, as well as being a mom.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of adjustment.
I think that's something I saw work caring for moms and babies, how everyone's introduction to motherhood is unique and different too. You're absolutely right. It was different for me between my first child and my second child, where my first child, it felt immediate. It was an ease. There was, I don't know why, it just felt like automatically I felt like a mother. And it's surprisingly enough with my second, where maybe the demands were greater, it was a bit more of a struggle. I had a harder time adjusting mm-hmm. to being a mother. It felt extremely overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And, I felt, like I could never do a good job. It was just all the self-doubt that happened. And I know a lot of women feel that with their first more than they do with their you know, other children. But that was that sort of feeling of feeling inadequate, and which I think mothers often deal with, that sort of feeling of inadequacy, totally. Not doing enough, not providing what your child needs, always having sort of your pulse on the family and sort of making sure that everything is going all right. It's just, it can be really draining.
Yeah, I think it's the guilt that's maybe the hardest part to learn to live with, because every time you try to take time for yourself because you know you need it and deserve it at times, you feel guilty.
Yeah.
And you kind of feel awful for being away and you want to get back. Yeah. And it's this kind of being torn between the two worlds in a way.
That's exactly right. That feeling of, that guilt, that not taking the time to care for ourselves. I saw that. I felt it personally, and I saw it with all of my friends would comment like, oh, I really shouldn't be doing this. But, you know, then doing something as simple as having lunch with, you know, a friend. And that is something I did not expect as when I became a mother, that sort of constant pressure of feeling like that. And it should change, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That understanding. And I feel when I have a daughter and I have a son, and I wonder what her experience as a mother will be, how different it will be for her. I hope that, you know, she can maybe pursue, carve out that time for herself, because it's, you feel like you aren't allowed to, but it's really necessary to do that, isn't it? To stay as a whole person.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, having had, I now have nearly adult, I have one full adult child and one that's almost an adult. And looking back, while their needs were great, I probably should have carved out more time for myself. I should have taken a little more time and not had that feeling of responsibility or guilt or whatever it was that was making me not do something for myself, because it probably would have given me a break and maybe given me a chance to catch my breath and feel like a full person, you know, a little bit more and not, just feel so pulled that you just, you aren't really, just the pressures can be very great.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, I think it was Osho who spoke about or wrote about the transition of being you, but then being more than you are.
Yeah.
And how that sort of, because I've noticed quite a lot recently, especially in, you know, scrolling social media, talking with people, quite a few mums, especially younger mums, are saying, oh, motherhood, like, I didn't change. The core of me is the same. How would you guys, what do you think about that? Can it be?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. For me, definitely, I feel like, like Anne, I'm an adult version of myself. So in that kind of way, I mean, you do get used to the level of responsibility, you know, looking after others and carrying that sort of responsibility for others, and therefore, you know, being an adult in a way more than you were before, because you had this freedom and you only had yourself to think about, and you didn't really have to be so serious about things. I mean, with birth and pregnancy came big complications for me, and that's been my sort of bridge to understanding the fine line between life and death. And that's been a super useful experience for me, because in quite a similar fashion to what you've seen, Anne, that made me kind of understand the shortness of life and really want to live every day as well as I can. And that's made me kind of, I'm in a great rush to live, in case you haven't noticed.
Oh, yeah.
There's a bit of work to do. It had to be done yesterday.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I really struggled. I think it was the hormones and the sort of traumatic birth and then that kind of shift that happened with the first baby being born. And I felt like I disappeared. I got really confused at that point. And it didn't come naturally to me at that point in any way. I felt frightened and very apprehended sort of. I mean, I couldn't quite get my head around what just happened. Mm. I don't know if that makes any sense.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I always felt terrible for mothers who struggled with that with their first, particularly with around breastfeeding in the hospital, where breastfeeding is not always the easiest task. It takes it's a process. Some it happens like that, but most of the time there's a process. Yeah. But for those who struggle with grasping on to the idea of motherhood and all the responsibilities that it includes and how it changes us, it's a process, and it is scary. And I always feel very heartbroken for people when they really struggle in that way with their first, because they doubt themselves, but they know they don't understand that it will come with time, you know, with to be patient with that process.
Yeah, and for me it was the understanding. I thought my persona had left the earth, and you know, there was only a mother left, and that was the most confusing part for me. And it was only gradually when I began to understand that I'm still there. I can be myself and a mother at the same time. But to be honest, this has been a process that's taken years for me. But it's things like kind of launching into this business and really going after my dreams and kind of understanding that I can still do that. I don't have to settle, this may be the wrong word, I mean, but you know, I don't have to be just a mom.
Yeah.
I can be many other things, just like I would have been before. So that's been the sort of turning point for me.
I feel like that might as well be the sort of driving force behind so many people who say, oh, motherhood didn't change me, or I'm still the same person I was before, is somehow this need to hold on to yourself, and then it might come off as being sort of, I don't know, I just found it many times a little bit judgmental when people say, oh, like, this is who I am, I've not changed, my birth was great. It's you're holding on to something so hard you're at the end.
Yeah, I suppose a key part of that process is you can't hold on to the past, and that persona in a way doesn't exist anymore. So I mean, it's about learning to let go of your previous self in a way, you know, with that I mean with the freedom of what you could do with your life and only think about yourself and put yourself first. And then you go through this process and you come out different at the other side, for sure, because you have to. And you're a much bigger person, you know, undoubtedly at that point. But then you come to realize that those personality traits, the type of person you are, your sense of humor, how you approach life, all of that is still the same. That doesn't go away. So it's that sort of, yeah, letting go of the past so that you can move forward and become a mother and so much more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that growth that you can take this makes a, it's, you have to be open to accepting the massive change that's taken place. And that can be very hard.
For sure.
Other things that can be very hard. This is now a segue to a slightly different topic. You mentioned breastfeeding earlier and how that can be very, very difficult for many people. I've spoken quite recently with a lot of our customers who really struggle with breastfeeding and they ask for help and they ask, oh, is your pump maybe something that could help me? You have resources. Do you have a lactation consultant? How was it to approach a person who's just given birth who might be struggling with everything that's going on?
That was really the number one job we did, you know, was supporting women in breastfeeding and helping them be successful. And we had different tricks of the trade, you know, that nurses do. We have sort of skilled hands that we can position the baby in a different way, and we can help. But every baby, every mom baby, the anatomy is different. The behavior, the suck of the baby is different. Everything is very unique. And so you'd have to approach it sort of, sometimes I would even just sort of stand back and sort of just watch the mom, you know, make the attempt of breastfeeding, and sort of how I could help. But mostly is just how to encourage them and to empower them with, again, information that how to make it a little bit easier. But breastfeeding was probably our most important job, because it's providing the nutrients for the baby. And if the baby is hungry, then they'll be fussy. And then that creates a whole nother stress for the mom. And she, and again, when women have difficulties breastfeeding, they doubt themselves. They think that's something that they're doing wrong, where they, if they could see all the moms and babies that I've seen, know that it's every baby and every mom is unique, and it's so often so challenging. But having the support with breastfeeding and having having someone who can help you with that is such an asset. And I feel for women who had that support maybe in the hospital, and then they go home and then they're don't continue to have that support. And then they're isolated and they doubt themselves and they feel inadequate and they feel like they can't do it. But they really can if they just have. And there are certain, obviously, some situations where it's just not going to work. There's other options. There's other options of feeding the baby. But if you can get that support, it can sure make a difference.
Yeah.
And I think that the way the birth goes has a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah.
I had two completely different experiences, but I mean, Ella's birth was lovely and peaceful, and everything went as planned. And I can remember having absolutely no trouble breastfeeding her, because she just kind of launched herself at my boob and would not let go. I mean, I was laughing at the hospital so much. I was like trying to pull the baby away and she just wouldn't let go.
We used to call those babies the barracudas.
Yeah. That's fitting. Yeah. That's really fitting.
And I never knew like a newborn could make those kind of movements, literally chomp at the boob.
Wow. That's amazing. That's exactly the opposite of what I was. And my mother keeps reminding me of this. It's amazing when you get older and yes. then your parents start to bring back the stories. I was the fussiest eater you've ever seen. I ate for 5 minutes, then I slept for 10, 15, and then I want it back.
Yeah,
I want it back on the breast because my milk bar was supposed to be open.
And 24 hours.
Oh, yes. And God forbid I would not let my mom sleep. I'm sorry, mother.
That's exhausting. Your poor mom.
I know. It can be like, you know, there's so many things that can happen. So many polar opposites. It's not just, you know, divided into two. It's divided into all the babies and all the moms.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah, it can be so difficult, and there's so much that the moms and the babies and even that you have to consider that even the babies are adjusting to extra uterine life. You know, they're coming out of the womb and things are harsh and difficult for them too. So there's a lot that they have to learn as much as the mom has to learn.
Yeah,
true.
Let's take one final break and come back to discuss a few more topics. So I wanted to bring our attention to mental wellness, postpartum depression, these issues that have been growing exponentially over the last year, largely due to the pandemic. But I mean, we're seeing a very frightening shift in the mental wellness, not just mothers, but of people in general. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and maybe some of your experiences from California.
Yes, I think there's a level of awareness and a more of an open conversation about postpartum depression. Even in the past 20 years since my son was born, it was hardly mentioned then, even then. When I would work with patients, you would see the shift. The hormone shifts would just be sort of so evident in front of your eyes. You know, a day after you give birth, you would start to cry. You know, like it's just so common. The hormone shift creates tears, and then the feeling of exhaustion, I think as nurses got much better in providing education about postpartum depression, because you're taking care of these patients for a very short period of time and then they're on their own. Oftentimes they're either isolated and they don't have that family support that can sort of share their own stories with their own experiences of postpartum depression. And I don't know about you, Laura, but I think a lot of times women are afraid to admit to feeling postpartum depression. Definitely felt it, I think, with both. I can't attribute, I think with maybe, as I said, with my second one, it might have lasted a little bit longer than it did with my first, but I think I felt it with both. And it's a complicated feeling because you have this feeling of joy and then you also can have this sort of darker feeling of inadequacy. I think the conversation in the healthcare area is much more open, and I think there's more honesty about talking about it. But personally, I think women still are sometimes a little hesitant to admit to that feeling, and it could get better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's perhaps even the wording postpartum depression.
Yeah.
And when you look at women, there's so much in between sort of so-called normal state and postpartum depression. There's like a massive range of feelings, anxieties, wellness or mood disorders, all sorts.
Things that can be triggered just from that experience, absolutely.
Yeah, so I definitely think that we need more conversation around it. Yeah. We need to kind of lower the stigma and make it clear to postpartum women that it's a normal part of the process to have all these mixed feelings.
Yeah.
And talking about it with its real name, I feel like it's just such an important thing that you actually talk about postpartum depression and you say the physical words, because so often I feel like, especially sort of within the past year in Finland, we've noticed this sort of shift in maternal well-being and maternal healthcare to more mother-centric way of caring, and mothers demand more and they know they deserve a better experience than maybe what they've got. And so this is not based on any evidence, this is just what I've observed. It seems to me that a lot of times we still talk about the baby blues.
Yeah.
It's the baby blues that are sort of, it's this, you know, it's this cutesy name for, for, yes, your hormones are crazy for the next few days following birth, but then sort of there's a regression after that. It should get better. And if it doesn't, then you have a problem.
That's right. Yeah. And that isolation you can feel when you just, it's just not getting better.
Yeah.
And what resources there are for, and how do providers address that with their patients? I think they talk about it and I think they might bring it up, and then it would just require the woman to be honest with and admit to it. And sometimes even that's difficult. So I think you're right, just having more of an open conversation.
Yeah.
Letting that stigma sort of.
Yeah. For me, I mean, going into sort of the nursing or the sort of neuvola system in Finland, where they have very regular checks on the baby, literally every week when you've had your first baby. And it's not very focused on the woman's sort of postpartum care or wellness. I mean, I remember there was one questionnaire that asked how I was feeling, you know, what was the level of alcohol consumed at our house, and kind of going to slightly maybe the other extreme in a way. And whereas I often, I think for the first 3 months, felt at a breaking point walking into those appointments, because it meant that I had to get myself and the baby out of the house at a certain time, which was really hard. And I had to be somehow semi-presentable, you know, walk in there and not break down, basically.
Yeah.
So I just remember being this mess who hadn't slept for like months, just kind of literally shaking on that seat, kind of going like, oh my God, I hope this goes well and the baby doesn't start screaming, because I don't know how much more I can take.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of same fear that you see in many new moms' faces, this sort of neurotic sort of approach to the baby, and every single small sound can just trigger you off.
Yeah.
And you do these crazy things, you know, some moms walk for like 20, 30 miles a day because that's the only thing they can do. I was obsessively carrying my baby and singing him all kinds of songs, you know, until you literally your back breaks, and we all develop our own kind of weird habits.
Yeah.
But, you know, that wasn't, I didn't feel like that person who I saw in that room had the maybe the understanding, but it didn't have the time. It wasn't the right place for that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt like quite a bit of a oversight in many ways, because you really are, now looking back, you think, okay, you don't have to sort of overreact like that, but you do, because you're a first mom, you don't know anything else, and you are in that moment, and nobody can describe the feeling of not having slept for 3 or 6 months, what it does to your head. It kind of really wrecks
it, really wrecks it does wreck you. It really takes its toll. It takes its toll mentally, and it's exhausting, to say the least. And you're absolutely right. I love the way you paint the picture of going to that appointment, getting there. It takes 2 hours to prepare to go to a 30-minute appointment, isn't it? The questionnaire might be provided, and maybe they might ask about a question of how you're feeling. But then after that, what if you say yes? What if you say I feel terrible? Well, then what happens?
And I have to point out, I'm so sorry to cut in, but I have to point out, we were talking last time with Lahia Fayed, and the guys pointed out this amazing thing that we've completely disregarded, which is the dads, because he is often at home and he knows you, and And asking that person, asking a person who's so close to you, who shares your, you know, day-to-day life, asking that person, hey, how do you think what's happening? It's such an undervalued whole area of, yeah. of things that we could take on and make the mental well-being for the mums so much better.
Yeah. And dads are experiencing their own huge life adjustment as well. And yeah. doing it together, it can be absolutely exhausting and very challenging. And yet then you have this responsibility of caring for this child. So finding a balance. So you're absolutely right. Having the conversation, being more open and utilizing the support you have perhaps right there in your home.
Yeah. And I'd like to come back to the education mm-hmm. part. I mean, I would Always. Have personally really, really benefited from knowing these things in advance. You know, if somebody had a frank conversation. I mean, everybody says, yeah, it's hard. It's going to be really hard. You're not going to sleep and all of this. But if like a healthcare professional in sort of antenatal education style would have prepared me for what was to come for the shift in your identity,
yeah.
That feeling of not belonging, kind of that, the sort of bewilderment in where you fit in life in general, and just really saying that these feelings of doubt and guilt and everything in between are completely normal,
yeah.
and you're gonna feel them and go ahead and feel them. There's nothing wrong with that. I think that would have been really important, but that wasn't discussed at all. I mean, I just went into it just not knowing anything.
Right.
It's crazy looking
and
back.
It's like I would do postpartum like discharge teaching, and that's just a few minutes of just sort of giving them information. It's usually not enough, but you're doing teaching the entire time while you're caring for patients. But how to get through that? What are steps that you can do as an individual, which is right, like balancing off, like sharing your duties with your partner, taking charge for a little while I'll step back and sort of collect my thoughts, go do something that feels good for me, and sort of finding a system that allows for that balance. Tools, giving patients or giving new parents the tools that they can, even laying a baby down in their crib for 10 minutes and stepping away can give you 10 minutes of a breather. And I know for me, that was just a way to sort of get my nerves in control and then go back. And it's amazing what 10 minutes, a quiet 10 minutes can do for any parent.
Yeah, and I remember I had to get one of those baskets that you can carry around the house with because the baby had to come everywhere.
Yes.
With me.
Yes.
Oh my God! Looking back, like wow.
That's
you know,
incredible.
We don't make it easy on ourselves.
Yeah.
No.
There's one bit that, well, and you're from the States, I feel like I have to ask this. I feel like if I didn't, we'd be missing a massive point. It's maternal leave,
yeah.
mat leave in the States. I think we think that it's very short. In reality, it's very short.
It's very short. Yeah. You get about, so for disability, so that's how it works for us. You can take it. I think you get about, and I really am not an expert about the human resources, you know, but with my first child, I think I had some preterm labor, so I had a little bit of extra time, and then I was able to take my 3 months.
Yeah.
With my daughter, I took a little time before she was born, and then I went back to work 8 weeks after
yeah.
giving birth.
Oh, that's yeah.
And it's hideous.
Yeah,
it's really cruel, to
yeah.
be perfectly honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you know that you're still breastfeeding, you're still learning your child, so much about your child. It's really the policy is cruel. And for those who can afford to maybe take more time off, well, that's just to their advantage. And some people make great sacrifices so that one parent or the other can take the time off and stay home, but it's exhausting, and I think it definitely contributes to an increase in postpartum depression for women in the U.S. without a doubt.
I have no idea how anyone in the U.S. can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been in no state for
yeah.
going into work. I mean, I, you know, leaving the house was one of the biggest things, and many days you couldn't even achieve that. Mm-hmm. So that's the reality. And then you go to work.
Yeah,
at a neonatal care unit.
Right. I think about that period of time in my life where I was taking care of young children at home and then going work. And this is when I was working my nights. So for 13 years, I worked nights. I would then go to work and to care for more babies and children. And it was 24 hours of childcare.
And you're doing nights.
And I was doing nights at that time.
So for 13, you live through that?
Yeah, it was... I think it was on pure adrenaline. I think my cortisol levels were probably through the roof during that time.
Yeah.
Because in the U.S., childcare is very expensive, so it gave me a chance to be home with my kids. They would go to nursery school for 3 days a week, and I would sleep for 2 or 3 hours and then go pick them up, which, you know, looking back, I think, was that necessary? Well, it was sort of necessary because it allowed us to be with my children, but it took an amazing toll, I think, on my mental health. But I'm very resilient, so I kind of was able, you know, I'm determined and resilient, and so I was able to do it. But looking back, is that necessary? Was how that was awful, and it was probably more than any person should have to tolerate. But then I had these, you know, as I mentioned before, I had these women that I worked with who were also new mothers and mothers of teenagers even. And you know, we were all going through the same thing. So we really supported each other.
I think that just highlights that need for the support group.
Right.
It's so important. Whatever you do in life, if you're a mother, if you're, I don't know, if you move to a new country.
Yes.
If you are a human being, you need
support.
People.
And, you know, it's funny when I think about working night shift, we always say night shift workers are very tight. Like, you create a really good bond with these people. And it's because everything's honest at 5 o'clock in the morning when you haven't been asleep for 24 hours. It's all cards are on the table, and you really just lay your heart out there, and you are truly yourself. And everyone, we would have some really seriously honest conversations at that time. And for that, I feel so grateful to have had the experience. It was hard, and it was demanding, but I learned so much about myself, but I learned so much about other people and their experiences too. And, you know, so we would be having our powwow at the nurse's station talking, and then you'd hear, and then you'd hear a baby cry. So then you'd go into the other mom's room, you know, and help them with their breastfeeding or it was like female power, you know, women power all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah, that is seriously impressive. I mean, you're such a strong woman. That's incredible.
I think it's helped having that experience, and then now raising my teenage daughter, which has its challenges, but, you know, I love watching her grow. But, you know, I always say to my children, you know, going through hard things is really a gift, because you just learn what you're capable of, but it teaches you so much, and you take those challenges, and it builds upon itself to become, you know, more of who you are. And if you can look at it that way, it helps build you in a positive way rather than thinking of it negatively.
Yeah.
On that note, I'm really curious, sort of getting closer to the end here, I'm really curious to hear, why did you decide to go back to school?
I know. Well, that's a good question, Mana. Well, I've been wanting to do it. So when I had my son, I was working for Columbia University. That was my employer when I worked at the pediatric residence. And I thought, well, this is my chance. I'm going to go back and get my master's of public health, because I really wanted to do that. And then I got pregnant, and I got sidelined. And I thought, well, I'll just do it later. And then, Laura, I'm sure you know, it's a little bit difficult to do those things after you have children. And so about 10 years ago, I really started to explore it a little more seriously. So I started taking classes, and I was going to do a nursing administration master's if I thought that might be a little more practical. And then I really just, I always wanted to do a master's of public health. So I also felt like I wanted to focus. So while I'm here, I'm working part-time as the school nurse, and I'm looking for, you know, other work opportunities if that should come up. But I'm focusing on a master's of public health and taking this time to really dive in and really study. And, you know, having been spread so thin for so many years, it's a gift to focus on school. And I feel like my brain is ready to tackle this challenge because it's not easy. As I just took my statistics exam, it was
not easy.
It was very hard. But I feel like my mature brain is ready for this challenge, and it really it's because I can dive in and really focus on it. It feels almost like a pleasure to. It is a pleasure to have that opportunity. So, and also, you know, going back to just working in hospice, I learned a lot about where I want my life to go. I have, you know, hopefully like another 20 years of working, and what do I want to do with that? How, what will I look back on and not regret, or will I regret if I didn't do it? And if I didn't, you know, I feel so grateful I had the clinical experience as a nurse in the hospital caring for direct patients. I will never regret that. But I would like to the next chapter to be something that I want to do that's different and challenges me in a different way, and maybe sort of meets me where I am right now.
London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine is definitely going to challenge you.
I can see that already, and I love it.
It's great, but it's a lot of work. I really appreciate because I'm an alumni of that school, and during my time, it was honestly one of the highlights there to have, you know, actual adults, because so many of us were, you know, med school people halfway through residency or intercalating through med school or you know, like me coming from social sciences, and then you have these few people who already have lived a life.
Yeah.
And that's such a valuable resource for us.
Yeah.
It's so important, and I really thank you for being you to the new people there.
Thank you. That feels very nice, and I think that's true. Everyone brings something to the table, and life experience, you know, it's very valuable. And the energy of and the enthusiasm and the new ideas of young. I mean, together we could just. There's so much that can be so many opportunities.
Yeah, it's so true. And. Yeah. Thank you for sitting down with us today.
Thank you both. This was a pleasure.
I am so impressed by what you've done. I'm really disimpressed, I have to say. That sort of personal experience from all those parts of life. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Can keep touch.
I hope so too.
Now that you're in Finland.
Yes.
So thank you. And join us next time when we sit down with another female change maker. Thank you.